This morning's first Bible reading comes from Genesis chapter 45, verses 1 to 28. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out,
"Send everyone away from me."
So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Joseph said to his brothers,
"I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?"
But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers,
"Come closer to me."
And they came closer. He said,
"I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land for these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither ploughing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and rule over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And now your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my own mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father how greatly I am honored in Egypt, and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here, there."
Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, while Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them, and after that his brothers talked with him. When the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, "Joseph's brothers have come," Pharaoh and his servants were pleased. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Say to your brothers, 'Do this. Load your animals and go back to the land of Canaan. Take your father and your households and come to me, so that I may give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you may enjoy the fat of the land. You are further charged to say, "Do this. Take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Give no thought to your possessions, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours.'" The sons of Israel did so.
Joseph gave them wagons according to the instructions of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. To each one of them he gave a set of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 sets of garments. To his father he sent the following: 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and provision for his father on the journey. Then he sent his brothers on their way, and as they were leaving, he said to them, "Do not quarrel along the way."
So they went up out of Egypt and came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan. And they told him, "Joseph is still alive. He is even ruler over all the land of Egypt." He was stunned. He could not believe them. But when they told him all the words of Joseph that he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob was revived. Israel said, "Enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I must go and see him before I die."
Our second reading for today comes from Matthew chapter 15, verses 10 to 28. Then he called the crowd to him, and he said to them, "Listen and understand. It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but it is what comes out of the mouth that defiles. Then the disciples approached and said to him, Do you know that the Pharisees took offense when they heard what you said? He answered, Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. They are blind guides of the blind, and if one blind person guides another, both will fall into a pit. But Peter said to him, Explain this parable to us. Then he said, Are you also still without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth enters the stomach, and goes out into the sewer? But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this is what defiles. For out of the heart come evil intentions, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defile a person, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile. Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Just then a Canaanite woman from the region came out and started shouting, Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David, my daughter is tormented by a demon. But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us. He answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But she came and knelt before him, saying, Lord, help me. He answered, It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. She said, Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall under their master's table. Then Jesus answered her, Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. And her daughter was healed instantly.
Well, good morning once again, and thank you so much for the opportunity to come and talk with you here today. Thank you to Diane for your generosity in letting me come on such an important day where you've got your congregational meeting. Your congregational meetings as well. My name's Rob Floyd. I work for an organisation called Uniting World, and I'll see if we can get this. Yes, there you go. And my responsibility within Uniting World, Uniting World is the national agency for the Uniting Church that is responsible for our partnerships with overseas churches, and that those partnerships are across Africa, Asia and the Pacific. And my particular role is responsible for some of the development programs or the programs that support communities when they're facing emergencies, cyclones and tsunamis and the like, but also programs that help establish and build communities in areas of education and health and so on. And Uniting World also has other members of its office that are involved in the exchange of people. So we have a mission program where people are exchanged, and Adam and myself are people who have been through that program over a number of years. And we also link with churches and develop church partnerships and support our partner churches who are going through some very difficult times. I want to share some stories with you about our work overseas in a few minutes, but I particularly want to just spend a minute or two, if I may, on the two readings that we just had that are such powerful readings and resonate so much of what we as a church are about. The first passage that we heard was about Joseph, and it follows on from a number of readings we've had in recent weeks, where Joseph, as you might remember, was sold into slavery by his brothers, and then his brothers came. Then, over a number of years in Egypt, Joseph rose up to become the Pharaoh's right-hand man and responsible for the whole kingdom. And in the story today, we hear that Joseph's brothers, because of a terrible famine, were forced to go to Egypt to seek to buy food. And initially, they don't recognise Joseph. And we heard the story this morning of Joseph revealing his true identity to his brothers. I just want to touch on a few points. when all else would have seemed a reasonable for Joseph to extract some revenge on his brothers, he did in fact instead weep tears of joy and forgive his brothers for all that had happened, because Joseph could see that God was at work in what had happened. That in fact God had led Joseph to Egypt for the purpose of saving his own people and also being a blessing to the people of Egypt. I'll just go to the next slide for a minute. To me, today's Bible readings, and I'll talk about the Matthew one shortly, is something about God calling us to cross borders, to go to different places and follow God into where God's mission is happening. I'll tell you a little about that photo later. So God has called Joseph and led him across a very difficult border to another country, another culture, another language, but in so doing to fulfill God's mission, God's purpose. The gospel reading, and I'll just be very quick on that as well. I want to focus particularly on the story in the latter part of that reading, where the Canaanite woman came to Jesus seeking for her daughter to receive healing. Once again, in this Canaanite woman, we have an outsider or a foreigner, someone who wouldn't sit comfortably with the people that Jesus was talking with. But this woman, this Canaanite woman, believes that Jesus can heal her daughter, and she is persistent. In the exchange that we heard read, in fact, the first time she asks, she's ignored completely. The second time, Jesus answers quite harshly and seems quite hard to hear. But after the third time, when the woman replies, Jesus, it's like suddenly realizes that God is present in this woman. He sees her. He acknowledges her great faith. And he heals the child. It seems again to me that in this passage we see Jesus realizing and recognizing that God is at work in this woman. That this woman, who is an outsider or a foreigner, is in fact exactly where God is calling Jesus to minister at that point. Again, a story where Jesus crosses a border, if you like, to another culture, another group of people, to an outsider, and where that woman is drawn into the kingdom of God through Jesus' healing act. So I wonder, for me, if I just might summarise, the two Bible readings today for me remind me that God is at work in the world, even and perhaps especially in the unexpected places, the strangers, the foreigners, the people we might not normally recognise and see. And my experience, and I have a very lucky and blessed job, is to travel around the world. And I'm sure those of you who have travelled will share this. Wherever I have travelled across the world, God has always been there ahead of me, working in the lives of the people. And it's always been a blessing for me to cross into those new situations and get some of the sense of joy and excitement at God at work in those places. So I just want to reflect for a moment, and then I'll tell you a little about that, the picture there. I wonder what it means for us here today in Morialto Uniting Church in South Australia, as citizens of this country of ours. I wonder what it means for us to cross borders, to be global citizens in that context. Because when I watch the news in recent weeks, in fact in the last few years, it seems to me that often we Australians are busier constructing borders than we are crossing them. The word border security is a fairly hot topic in Australia. In fact, I think it's even a television program. Not all the borders that we need, that I think God calls us to cross, are national boundaries. There are many borders in our society based on ethnicity or politics or social status or gender or disability or injustice. But I believe today, and I'll tell you a little more in a moment, some stories. I believe today more than ever that God challenges Christians to cross those boundaries, to cross those borders that divide and isolate people, that limit the possibilities of people in this world. Now, I know from the little conversation I've had and the research I've done that many people here in Morialta Uniting Church are indeed active in crossing borders and breaking down barriers. And I want to say how proud I am to belong to and work for this Uniting Church of ours, because I see that this is a church that is willing to cross boundaries and break down borders, and particularly in the case of our partner churches overseas, where the Uniting Church shows a particular care for people who are poor, marginalised, isolated, or facing injustice in other places in the world. That photo is a border crossing between South Sudan and Northwest Kenya. It's not a very glamorous immigration post, and a very contentious border. But that's one of the borders that the Uniting Church has been able to cross. And I know that there are a group of people here who have been working and interested in boreholes in southern Sudan and education, the Nachipo School in southern Sudan. And that is part of that location where the Uniting Church has been able to cross into southern Sudan and provide some very basic help to give young children an education and village communities fresh water that would otherwise they'd need to walk 10, 15 kilometres a day just to fetch. Our Uniting Church, through Uniting World, but more broadly, works with over 36 partners, and it is our aim and our vision to link communities together so that not just people in my job, but all of us become people who cross borders in this world. And in so doing, we journey together, willing to be challenged and changed, willing to work in partnership, willing to be committed to each other and to respect each other in so doing. And I just want to thank you for a moment before I continue, because I know this church has been involved in Lent Event in this last year as well, and I gather that's correct. Can I just say that Lent Event is one, just one, of a number of great programs in the Uniting Church and in Uniting World that is doing and is helping us to cross those borders. And I'm the person responsible in my job for making sure that every cent that is raised by Lent Event goes exactly to the projects that are nominated. And I'd be delighted to talk to you later if you're particularly interested in any one of the things that has come up for you as a result of your participation in that. But can I now just take you on a bit of a journey? Three places in this world of ours where the Uniting Church is crossing some borders and seeing God at work in remarkable situations. I want to take you to the Southern Highlands of Papua New Guinea, where there's a peace program called Young Ambassadors for Peace. And I want to introduce you to a man called Pastor Aguilo. Pastor Aguilo lives in the Southern Highlands in a town quite near Tari in PNG. In this community, there is a long history, thousands of years of tribal unrest and tribal violence. Pastor Aguilo's tribal group has been fighting against another group for 15 years over a particular conflict. 9 lives have been lost as a result of that conflict. The last person who was killed was Pastor Aguilo's young son. It was his tribe's turn to exact revenge on the other community. But Pastor Aguilo stood up and said, "No, my faith challenges me to say that there must be a better way than killing and taking lives." And so Pastor Aguilo, with the Young Ambassadors for Peace program, organised a workshop where people from the two tribes were brought together. Over the course of 5 or 6 days, they did a range of activities, one of which was where each of the people was asked to write or draw on a piece of paper the particular grievance they have against the other side, to actually name what it was that was the reason for their need to respond and to fight. And you can see in the middle of the picture there, there's a cross made out of petals of bougainvillea, I'd guess. And in the middle, there's some papers. Now, what you can't see is those papers are burning, smouldering. And each person is invited to come forward and put their particular burden or grievance on the fire and let it burn as a way of cleansing, if you like. The reason that photo is significant is you can see Pastor Agillo is the man in the front. The man following him is from the other tribe and during the course of the workshop admitted that he had taken two lives during the course of that conflict, but had also seen the futility of that. During the course of the week, once people have moved beyond that, people start to make plans of how they, as a community, can work towards resolving that situation. And you can see there an action plan coming. And so just to conclude, my colleague Peter spoke with Pastor Agillo at the end of this session, and he had great hope because he could see that through this workshop, through this meeting, God was actually at work in the lives of both of those communities now, calling them out of this conflict that had set this barrier between them to a new peace and a new way of living together. Somewhere completely different, in South India, up in the hilly regions called the Nilgiri Hills, where tea plantations are very widespread. The tea plantations, of course, are owned by rich people, rich companies, and the tribal communities who lived in those areas have progressively been squeezed off what was traditionally their land and are now forced to live in very basic communities, as you can see, on the margins of those plantations, and very basic housing. Life for the women is very tough. Our partner, the Church of South India, and particularly the Coimbatore Diocese, has had a special ministry with these marginalised, outcast people. Most of the rest of the Indian society choose not to go anywhere near them because they are at the lowest level of the caste system. They are the outsiders. Our partner church went and spoke with them, and we've now been, Uniting World has been supporting this project now for nearly 11 or 12 years. In the first instance, the community said, what we most want is to give our kids a chance that we've never had. And they asked us, let's see if we can do that. They asked us to help them establish a little schoolhouse there. And that was the building. And the lady standing in the front there is the teacher employed. And she runs a preschool for the children in that community to get them just started, because you see, schools in that area use the language of the state, not the tribal language that these children grow up with. And so the little kids were going to school sometimes but could not understand it, and you can imagine quickly lost interest and dropped out. So it started as a school. And there are some of the kids. Once they graduate from preschool, they move into some of the local primary schools, and we've supported that. And if we go again, I was there in the morning when the kids were going off to school, and the project helps provide transport. Can you see in the background, this is just a little aside, there are two Jeeps there. All the kids in that picture went to school in those two Jeeps. But that was how they got to school, and it was part of that project and such a really valuable part. But one of the things that happened that was most interesting is, as our partner church developed trust in that community with this school, a very interesting thing started happening. You see, the mums who brought the kids to school hung around and chatted. And they had aspirations and ideas of their own. And one of the things... Sorry, can we go back a photo? Sorry. Yep. One of the things that became clear is that those mums wanted to work together as well. And the young lady in the photo there, and it's a bit hard to see, but she's very proudly showing me a list, and I think you can see that that's a matter of pride. What happened was that our partner employed this young woman, and she has developed 6 self-help groups of the mums in that community. And those young mums have set up self-help groups that are kind of like little cooperatives where they all contribute money, they all buy fabric, and so some of them are sewing uniforms for the children, some of them are making handicrafts to sell at the markets, some of them have a vegetable patch that they're selling to the markets and so forth. The project has expanded, and then another interesting thing happened in that village. It turned out that none of the people who lived in that community were actually existed in the registers of government. They were non-entities. They didn't have ID certificates. They didn't have any passports or any documentation. So our partner arranged for all these mums to go down to the town to register and be identified as citizens. And that happened. But you see, it gets even better, because the Indian government says that there is a law that says they must provide education to all communities, all registered communities. Now, you see, once the women had an identity and were registered, they got together and 100 women went and sat outside the council chambers in town for 3 days and said, I think you'll find that you haven't built a school in our village, because that's what the law says. And 2 years later, if we go to the next one, the Indian government built them a little school. And it gets even better for me than that. The Indian law also says that in every state government and local council, there must be a proportion of women, 30%, and there must be representatives from minority groups. And this group elected this lady, who is now on the council representing their village interests. Now, I don't know if you get as excited as I obviously do, but one thing that's been really amazing there is a village community that was isolated. They were the untouchables. No one would go there. Our partner has crossed that border and opened up a whole wealth of possibilities. I want to tell my last story, and I know that, sorry if I'm going on a bit, but this is about Zimbabwe, and I know that there is some interest here in Zimbabwe. Our partner in Zimbabwe is the Methodist Church in Zimbabwe, and I want to just show you a couple of photographs. Much of Zimbabwe is beautiful, fertile country. Now, the photo doesn't quite do it justice, but that's quite lovely, fertile country, except it's just not doing anything. It's lying dormant, and much of Zimbabwe is like that. Further out you go, you can see that the countryside, the further out from the city you go, the country gets progressively poorer until you get to the outside, and I hope you can see how scrubby and salty and miserable that countryside is. That's where the native Zimbabweans generally live, because under the colonial period 100 years ago, they were driven off the good land to the poor marginal land so that the farmers could exploit the good farmland. Now, what you might know now is that over a period of the last 10 or so years, Robert Mugabe has driven many of the white farmers off that land now, and it's just lying dormant. And the many poor villages are still often located out in this terribly barren and difficult land. We go to the next one. Transport is literally by donkey-drawn cart. This was the main shopping centre in town. Virtually nothing there. One of the larger communities, this was the sign outside. Three of the shops had that sign. Now, the tragedy of that is because HIV/AIDS is such a huge issue in Zimbabwe. Can I tell you... that at the moment, the average age at which people die in Zimbabwe is 37 years old. I wonder how many of us would be alive if we were living in Zimbabwe today. It's amazing. And if we just keep going, Villages are very simple. Next one again. Housing, very basic. Next one again. Particularly women who bear much of the brunt of that in very difficult conditions. In that context, we have our water harvesting project. And if we just go to that, I'll just show you some photos. Our partner, the Methodist Church, helps by buying cement and helping people to make bricks. And then if we keep going, those bricks can be made into a simple rainwater tank. Yep, keep going. And again, you can see the tank being built. And keep going. Then they render it and smooth it. And at the last, you have a rainwater tank. Now, in a place where the groundwater is generally very poor and salty, where there's only 3 months a year of rain, and I think Adelaide can probably understand what it's like to have very long dry periods, providing rainwater tanks for these communities doesn't give people a lot of water, but gives them enough water for their family to drink through that long dry season. I just want to show you one other little thing we're doing in Zimbabwe in the same region, but it's a slightly different area called Gutsa. And if we go there, in this community there are 300 young children who are orphaned because of HIV/AIDS. That means one or other of their parents, or usually both, have died. And so these children are either living with grandparents, or the oldest child, often a 10 or 12 year old, is raising the family. It's quite remarkable. In that community, they've made the decision that they don't want their children to be sent away, you know, to orphanages in the cities or whatever. That's not what's best for their children, they've said. We want our children to stay in our culture, in our language, and to grow up in our community. And so the women particularly, but also a few men, have banded together to develop some livelihood projects to generate income to care for that community. Here's a group of women who are breeding pigs to sell. If we go to the next one, a group of men have set up a little carpentry shop. And if we go to the next one, you can see that. And lastly, a group of women have set up a sewing cooperative where they can sew school uniforms and fabrics and so on to sell in and around their community. This is a community that is outcast because it's remote from the capital city of Zimbabwe. It's isolated. People are living in extremely difficult conditions, and their community has been ravaged by HIV/AIDS. It's in that community that our partner, the Methodist Church, is crossing borders and making an incredible difference, and in a place where I can see God really at work in that place. So look, let me just conclude and come back, if I might, to the start. I believe passionately for myself and for our church here in Australia that God calls us to cross borders, wherever they may be. And I'm very taken by a passage in Isaiah where God says, when you walk through the waters, you will not be you will not drown. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The reason I like that is in God's instruction to the people to go out and cross borders. Notice God uses the word when, not if. It's not an option. It's when you do it. It seems to me that God calls us to go out and cross borders. And he asks us to be a part of his mission in doing that. And in that same passage, and I won't read it to you now, but God, having said, go out, cross those borders, leaves us with the comforting words, fear not, for your God goes before you and is with you. Fear not. We are called to cross borders, but we are called to also to understand that God is already at work in those places, and God is inviting us as a uniting church to join him in his mission field. Thank you for your time. I'd be delighted to talk with you, if I may, afterwards, anyone who has particular interest in any of the work that we're doing. And I thank you for this opportunity, and I just want to encourage you in your support of the wider mission work of our Uniting Church overseas, because God is doing wonderful things in some of these places, and God calls us to be a part of that. So thank you very much.